Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome your Carolina Panthers.
Hey, yeah, relax. Yeah, take a deep breath.
Oh yeah, I'm hot.
If you really upset, bomb on me so I can go inside. Okay. You got me?
Yeah.
It's like loose in a tooth.
Yeah.
Okay?
No.
I won't press no charges. You can even play the whole season. No game suspension, none of that. Alright?
Yeah.
I may even give you some money. Alright? I just want to make you laugh. Okay?
Cat scratch fever.
Not even, baby.
Cat scratch fever.
I can't quit now. Yeah, I keep my focus, man. I keep my focus. We're going to find out how far we can push ourselves.
Welcome to another episode of Cat Scratch Radio. I'm Jackson, your host. Yet again, I was trying to get one of my damn audio clips to work, but I guess it's going to be one of those nights already here. It's faulting out on me. But so the season is finally over. For us, it's been over for quite a while. Using their own words of one of their fans from their site, they did the most Falcon thing ever. They gave up the biggest lead in Super Bowl history. So way to go, Falcons. You know what it feels like now, don't you? I got to give a big hat tip out there to Biff Kensington, if I'm saying that right, for it. I saw his post. I didn't go troll the Falcons like maybe some of you did. But I did one of the inner circle guys, I guess it was BW, said, I really love what old Biff said, and had a link, so I went and looked at it, and yes, hat tip to you. He was basically saying he was nice and cordial until he remembered how they treated us this time last year, and so then he put up a really nice gif of somebody choking, so I had to applaud that with a Picard applaud. As you all know, the Falcons squandered a 25-point lead. And I don't know about you, but it was like you could just see it slipping away from them. And particularly when they scored to make it to get within 8 points. And I said at that point, and I'd actually already gone home at that point from the bar I was at. The wife and I went home about the middle of the third quarter, and I was like, but when we got home, we flipped it back on. But I look at her, I said, if the Falcons don't score, you know, at least go down and kick a field goal here, they're going to lose this game. And sure as shit, they did, in classic choke fashion. you know, in the end, they just couldn't stop the Brady. And had a little lady luck on their side, as they usually do. And and he's not even going to retire, apparently, so... there's that, but I was with a bunch of Falcons fans, and I bet it was just absolute mayhem over there at the end. I'm kind of glad I left. Not sure I need to see those guys cry. I guess my only other thought is how in the hell does James White not get the MVP? Of course, it's the Brady, and I guess he was going to get MVP if they won, period, no matter what the hell happened. That's the way it goes. But if there's anybody that's been snubbed for Super Bowl MVP, it's James White, who scored 3 touchdowns, caught 14 passes for 110 yards, 6 runs for not – he didn't run for much, but ran for 2 touchdowns. It's like, you know, and the game winner, which – was quite amazing. Nice run that, thank God he did score, because if he didn't, how the hell were they going to get all those people off the field? Yeah, now that's my lasting thoughts on this Super Bowl. They're all calling the best ever. It was a good game. It's what I was looking for. And, in the end, the Falcons shed tears. And I was okay with that. So, let's see. I got a bunch of people out here on the line. You know, we're going to talk, obviously, the draft, some free agency, Panthers offense, maybe a little rosterbation for you. But let's start off with Brian, my trusty sidekick. What's going on, Brian?
Hey, Jack. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Doing good. What's your, tell us your Super Bowl story.
Well, let's see. I started at one of my go-to bars around here. Went and saw the game. Pretty much everybody there. I mean, I'm in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, aka Amish country, which is mostly Eagles and Steelers fans. So nobody really gave a crap about the Super Bowl, aside from people who were rooting against the Patriots. So it was nice. Like I had a nice little conversation with a couple different people about it, and a lot of them kind of just were like, you know what, I don't really even care if the Falcons do win, whatever. Like, if the Falcons don't win, who cares? So. Yeah. A lot of vanilla takes, I'll put it that way. So I left around halftime. I was like, oh, the Falcons got it. I got into it with a bunch of people on Facebook because there were tons of Eagles fans who were all showering praise onto Matt Ryan and the Falcons. And I was like, all right, let's not all pretend we're Falcons fans now when the Patriots are – just because the Patriots are a team you don't like. And that really riled people up. But it was funny. Like, as I started that debate – on Facebook, like, going to war online, the Patriots started their comeback. So I like to think my saltiness may have helped fuel that as a Panthers fan. That said, I've said in the past, I have some friends that I've talked to at the Falcoholics site, and, I know a lot of Panthers fans really dislike Falcons fans, but for the most part, my dealings with the Falcoholic and a lot of their fans have been very civil. Aside from, the random trolls who come over after a Falcons game where they may have won. So I felt bad, and I sent them my condolences and said, I know how you feel. So, crazy game, though. Crazy game.
Yeah, it was. It was not without its just miraculous catches, amazing runs, turnovers, a few boneheaded plays. I found it interesting that the Falcons fans, for the most part, were laying the blame on the offense, which, I kind of found strange, considering, the defense did a pretty damn good, they did a good job for three quarters and then just gassed. The focus is they didn't run the ball very much when they got that big lead, and that's probably about the one good point I will concede to them. But I don't know. They seem to be dishing on Kyle Shanahan, and maybe that was just because they knew he was leaving anyway. Of course, he's now already been hired.
Yeah, I think that it's not necessarily untrue to hate on their offense for it, because what ultimately came of it was that when the Falcons offense wasn't scoring and they were getting off the field real quick, their defense would then have to go back on the field without that break. So, I don't necessarily disagree. I think the Falcons offense also, at least in my opinion from watching them all season, seemed to always kind of go for the kill shot early and keep putting up points and don't let it stop. And I think they were a little overly aggressive at times. On that one play where Ryan got sacked and then they're dialing up long passing plays when they really don't need to at that juncture in the game. But I can understand the mentality of don't let Brady back in the game. Let's keep the ball out of his hands. Let's put up more points on the board. So I do get it, but I do agree that I think that their play calling of not really running the ball as much. And granted, the Patriots were doing a decent job of stopping it in the second half, but running the ball isn't just about getting first down. It's also about chewing up clock. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It just seems somebody, Ron Rivera wouldn't have hesitated to, run two minus 1 yard runs right there just to chew a minute off the clock.
Yeah.
If not more. On his first two downs and then threw it on third down. It's always easy to second guess, I guess. But their defense did play pretty well for, three quarters, if not even more.
It'll be interesting to see how they do. And they have a lot of those young pieces that they're going to come back to, which is the same freaking thing that all of us said as Panthers fans last year after the Super Bowl. Tevin Coleman and Devontae Freeman are both really good. They obviously still have Julio Jones. Matt Ryan played pretty well this year. They inked Mac to a long contract. I think it was like 4 years on offense, and obviously defense.
They have a lot of free agents.
So.
But I'm just going to rely on the whole damn Super Bowl loser curse because it sure kicked our ass last year. Rivera preached all offseason trying to figure out how to avoid the curse. And it just happened any damn way.
Yeah, you can't really fight injuries. And Cam obviously wasn't healthy all year, and the offensive line took major hits during the season. So, sometimes Super Bowl teams get there because they played well but also had some good fortune.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's see. We got, I see Goose Creek out on the line, and John, I'll get you guys here in a minute. I'm going to bring in old Durst, my other sidekick. What's up, Durst?
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
Pretty good. I assume you watched the Super Bowl as well?
Yeah, my story is not as fun. I watched I pretty much watched the entire Super Bowl from the emergency room. My grandmother fell and had to go to the emergency room about 20 minutes before the Super Bowl, but she's okay, and I won't bum anybody out with that story.
Hey, at least she's
well,
okay.
Damn. All right. Yeah. Well, glad to hear she's okay. Yay, Grandma. Good.
So one day I got to watch the Super Bowl again, though, and figure out how exactly we got from point A to point B. Because, again, the TV was on in a room, and she wasn't, she was pretty much just chilled and relaxed the whole time. So I was able to watch it, but not able to completely concentrate on, what was going on. It just seems like, how did this happen? I turned my back, and how do we get from point A to point B so quickly?
Well, Ryan got sacked and fumbled, and that gave them a short field. I want to say that was the touchdown that brought them within eight. But from there, it was just suddenly the Falcon offense was just going three and out, and the Falcon defense was just winded. And the Patriots found life and a little bit of luck. It did seem to happen pretty damn quick, I must say. But it was just the proverbial snowball that once it started, and like I said, that one where they scored on that, and, it's because they created the turnover and then scored and got within eight. It's like, all right, the Falcons, y'all got to turn this out. Got to divert it right here, or it might be over. And shit, if it wasn't over. You don't really need to watch but the fourth quarter. I mean, I admit the 82-yard pick six was pretty impressive there by Robert Alford, a guy that was on the free agent market, I believe. Wasn't he? And,
he was slated to be, I think. They signed him to an extension during the season.
Okay. I'd like to steal him. But the Falcons played well, on offense and defense through three quarters. And not that it's not worth watching, but You know.
Yeah, it seemed like every time I looked up, it was Grady Jarrett with the sack, or Julio with an amazing catch, and then you know, then at some point in time, all of a sudden, you know, New England was making their big comeback.
Yeah,
one thing I did not
technically
want to do.
Go ahead.
Nope. Go ahead. Okay. Well, all I was going to say was the one thing I did not expect New England to do was double cover Julio almost every play, and that's exactly what they did for the Patriots. Yeah, I did not expect Bill Belichick to roll play a game plan like that out, because I feel like that's what every team did to the Falcons this year.
Well, you know, that's his MO. Is he's going to shut down your number one weapon. And I think he focused on Vic Beasley on defense, on making sure he wasn't going to kill him. And then so then instead Grady Jarrett had his big-ass game. You know, three. What I was going to say is the Falcoholic, they had a thing. Jarrett set Super Bowl record with three sacks. And I was like, no, 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 no. He tied the Super Bowl record with three sacks. That's what Coney Ealy had last year. Of course, we see what that got him the next year. But,
hey, it's the new formula. NFC random NFC South team tears through the NFC, only to lose to a veteran quarterback. That's why I'm going to say it here. You're hearing it first here. I'm calling the Bucs in the NFC next year against the Steelers, and the Steelers win the Super Bowl.
Okay. We will we'll write that down right here.
Yeah. I'll see how much money I have underneath my mattress.
You probably get pretty good odds on the, well, certainly the Bucks. I don't know about the Steelers. Of course, Big Ben might retire, dude. That certainly would have to change your outlook.
Yeah, he's going to get the Peyton Manning treatment.
What, he's going to Denver?
He'll play one last season and, like, just power through it just to get that Super Bowl so he can ride off in the sunset.
Yeah, well, I'm sure old Ben would like to do that.
Yep.
Maybe he'll do the Brett Favre and kind of flip-flop on his retirement plans back. Yeah.
He could go to the Jets. Be just like Brett Favre. So, yeah, I don't think that's going to happen, but we'll see. All right. Well, let's see. I'll just continue around the horn there. Just hold on, Durst. I'm going to add Old Goose Creek. What's up, GC?
Hi, gentlemen.
Hello.
So, did you watch the Super Bowl?
I did. I enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty good.
Lasting impression? What do you think?
I think Atlanta blew it in. Of course, Patriots tried to give it away too. First down on the 2-yard line, and they threw another pass. Almost got it intercepted.
Oh, that's a good point. That was the same play they won on 2 years or 3 years ago, whatever it was, right? Yep.
Any kind of pass in that situation, first down on the 2-yard line, it seemed like they'd have learned when they lost the Super Bowl with the interception there last time.
Well, they won it.
Oh, they won it with the interception. The Seahawks were the one that threw it.
Yeah, right. Yep.
But, I mean, you know, I thought
well,
that was stupid.
Yeah, he's the Brady. Brady doesn't make that kind of mistake. So Belichick has 7 rings, but Brady only has 5. When did Belichick get 2 other ones? Did he get any with the Patriots before Brady got there? He must have got them with somebody else.
He must have been when he was assistant coach.
Yeah, that's got to be it.
Definitely was not when he was with Cleveland.
Oh, come on. Cleveland still would have fired him.
Well,
Well, what else, GC? What's going on in Pantherland for you? Or you got any hot topics or news you want to bring up?
No, I enjoyed the game, but I wasn't against Atlanta so much or against the Patriots. If I had to pick, I probably would have rather seen Atlanta win. But it really wasn't that big of a deal. I hate cheaters winning.
Yeah.
And then they had old Kraft at that shit-eating grin, you know?
Of course, the booing of Roger Goodell there at the end, that was...
Yeah, that's sick.
They just won't let it go.
Belichick leading a cheer about no off days or whatever.
What the hell? No
at the parade? You didn't hear about that?
I saw the headline. I didn't get really what, I mean, just the cheer they came up with. He's going to win another one next year? That's what he's saying?
No, he's talking about
God.
Goodell giving Brady the time off at the beginning of the season.
Oh. Well,
they ought to sign his ass.
That's funny. I had no idea that's what it meant. I thought it was something about to do him, but next year.
Like I said, I was sort of surprised on the Panthers blog about, you know, so many people being so salty. But I guess some people
honestly, I was on it for like the first 30 minutes on the open thread, and then I got distracted and just forgot about it because I was with a crowd of people. So I didn't really see what was going on. But, I mean, how were we not
part of being a hardcore fan?
No matter who won.
Part of being a hardcore fan, you're either in the Super Bowl or you're salty.
Yeah.
I guess I'm a slacker.
You're a slacker. Your saltiness already subsided. Now you're feeling sorry for the Falcons.
I'm old and mellow.
The only reason I went to war on Facebook is because I was salty. So instead of being salty about it, I just called people out for claiming to be Falcons fans on there. Every year it happened. Like even when the one year the Saints went to the Super Bowl, there were tons of people on Facebook, and I went to war then too about it. I was like, "Oh yeah, tell me who the quarterback was before Drew Brees," and very few people could answer that question.
That's funny.
I'm just a salty guy. What can I say?
I wonder if they can tell you who the quarterback
was before Newton, because everybody's wiped that from their memory.
Sadly, I have not.
Jake DeLome, right? Jake DeLome. Matt Moore.
He who shall not be named.
I don't know who else it could be. You'd have to go back to Berline, I guess. That's all I can remember. But before Brees, was there somebody between Brees and DeLome?
Brooks, I thought. Aaron Brooks.
Brooks? Was he after DeLome?
Ryan quarterback.
I remember him.
We're talking – yeah, I believe – I mean,
yeah,
back then I knew the answer, but – yeah, but
yeah.
I don't remember now.
Back then you knew the answer. Back in the day, I knew the answer to a lot of shit that I don't know today.
That's just one of those things I would consider useless information at this point, because the Saints aren't good enough for me to ask a question like that.
Exactly.
Even you ask that, and all they'll say is, who dat?
Who dat? Yeah. Oh, my God. Who dat? I'm
well,
so glad that
was kind of a trick question.
We don't have to hear that.
You know,
I really think I need
that your answer is actually a Panther fan, a Panther player.
I'm on a podcast
Well, I don't know. I guess we can switch over to some draft talk here, Durst. I have to admit, I really like Jeremiah McDaniel's top 10. Just top 10 players.
Yeah, he just
on
had
his
a new. I think his new top 10 just came out, top 50 just came out today.
Yeah, he did a top
2.0
top 10 video. And,
wait, who is this?
I like it. He's a
Daniel
NFL.
Jeremiah.
Com writer.
Oh, Daniel Jeremiah. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, Daniel Jeremiah.
I missed that. Yeah.
But I liked it. It was just, you know, he didn't, again, so it's a big board, not, you know, not a mock draft. And it didn't have any of the quarterbacks in there. I mean, I've seen some big boards with some people in the top 10. I'm like, what? So he had Garrett, then Hooker as number 2. But again, his top, let's see, his top 5, no, 6 mm-hmm. are defensive players. Garrett
is
top.
Yeah, I'm pulling up the list now.
Like
yeah, Garrett. And, I don't know, it seems like every year we get this consensus number 1 up there, and then as we get closer and closer, then it changes or something happens, and that person doesn't go first. So we're
wondering
if that's going to happen
to Garrett
or not.
The Browns currently hold the first pick, so that could go anywhere.
Exactly.
And they could easily trade out of that position if, you know, given one of those RG3 offers or...
But I haven't seen Malik Hooker this high anywhere. They got him at number 2, and then this Lattimore at cornerback, then finally Jamal Adams at safety, then Jonathan Allen, and then Reuben Foster. Just, you know, that's what, 2 is that? Where's Lattimore play? Is he a Crimson Tide?
Yeah, Lattimore's Ohio State.
Okay, okay.
Ohio State's got a bunch of guys again.
Yeah.
And Lattimore's the guy that I did a profile on last week. And, the beginning of it, it was because the breaking news was he has to have 2 surgeries this off season. It'll be out at least 4 months, if not longer. I think it was a labrum and a hip surgery. So I'm kind of surprised to see that Jeremiah still has him number 2, but I think the feeling was that this was going to be a pretty – you know, pretty routine surgery, and you know, he just won't be able to work out at the combine, or perhaps no working out at all. You know. But
I was just gonna say, I don't think if you're talking top 50 prospects, if we're talking top 50 prospects and not like draft boards per se, I can see why he'd be ranked so high, because you'd probably disregard an injury that's not career threatening. Someone disagrees with me.
Well, a lot of people disagreed with you because only 29% said that the Panthers should draft Malik Hooker with the 8th pick if he's still on the board. So we had when we did a poll, it was 353 people voted no, 73%, and only 29% said yes.
Are we talking Lattimore
sure
or Hooker?
That's that was for Hooker.
Yeah. Yeah, I was talking about Lattimore, but is Lattimore the one who has the injury, or is it Hooker?
No, Hooker's the one that has the injury. And then Lattimore's the corner.
Yeah.
Lattimore's the cornerback, or one of the 2 Ohio State cornerbacks, which, you know, we talked a little bit about last week, or whether or not we think there's any chance that we'd pick a corner. And I think the consensus was we just dedicated too much, you know, draft resources last year to pick a corner very high. But, you know, it's kind of a little of a different skill set. You know, Lattimore might be a guy that could be more of a slot guy. And
yeah, just depends, I guess. Yeah, no, as far as Hooker goes, same point, like, top 50, obviously, you would leave him up there. But for a team that's like Carolina, you don't want to, like, in the top 8, probably pick a guy like Hooker that you may or may not play up front, especially, like, in the beginning, especially when you I mean, they could probably swing it with Boston because it's not like – because Boston's at least a semi-passable starter at times. But, yeah, I don't see Carolina taking Hooker in the at the eighth pick.
Yeah, if you have a choice between some healthy guys or some guys that may not be healthy, you know, with Hooker, you know, he's only had one season of major college football, and if he got out of that season with two injuries that required surgery, it makes you kind of wonder about his durability.
Yeah.
The biggest surprise for me in this top 10, though, is Corey Davis, the wide receiver. Because, I mean, I know a lot of people have had him as the second or third best wide receiver. It's the first time I've seen him ranked above Mike Williams. And I have to admit, I watched some of his film tonight, and the guy is pretty damn impressive. Not quite as big as Williams, but they're very high on his route running, and he seems to have an incredible pair of hands. What do you think of Davis?
Yeah, he doesn't seem to drop many. Yeah, he doesn't seem to drop many, that's for sure. And he, he's got a, not as an impressive body as Mike Williams, but he's still going to be a bigger than average receiver if he, if he measures up to his listed size. I think he's listed somewhere like 6'3", 205, and maybe he ends up being 6'2", 200. And
he's a lot cleaner wide receiver than Mike Williams is.
Yeah, crisp on his routes. And
not so physical.
Really nice
one handed pass interference on occasion with Williams.
Yeah, I think he's probably a little bit more, I don't know if you'd say pro ready, because I think they're both pretty pro ready with Mike Williams being a senior. And but I do think that maybe more sophisticated of a route runner, and maybe just more, more prepared for the NFL. Now he Corey Davis also has an injury that's going to supposedly keep him out of the combine, but it doesn't sound like his is a big deal, more of an ankle, and he'll probably be fine for his pro day.
We've got the combine coming up. That's one thing I remember. They've moved it up from where it used to be held, and I think it's the last week of this month, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, I think it begins
right
on the 28th, so
the 28th
stretches into the first week of March.
Okay. I remember it had a February start date.
Yeah, I think maybe just the weigh-ins and things are on the 28th, but I may be wrong on that. But it is coming up in just a couple weeks, and I don't think I'll have Corey Davis quite as high as Daniel Jeremiah and some of the other guys have him. That probably is the highest I've seen him. I'm not too sure anybody else has him top 10, but I probably would have him more like in the 20s. And
yeah. I don't know how these guys make a damn decision. It's easy to see how they screw it up. Trying to rate these guys. And all I know is at number 8, we should get a pretty damn good player. And, everyone seems to think that Fournette is the pick, which tells me that Fournette will not be the pick. But I don't know, maybe so. I actually just put up a post here a little bit ago that, Rivera is saying, we can't have a quarterback be our lead runner, our main runner. And I just wonder if he's just going to scrap the read option altogether.
That post went up about 5 minutes before the radio show went on, right?
Yeah, I think I said it for 9:30. I thought I did.
It might have been. I think I read it right before I made the call.
Hey, I was just trying to squeeze it in.
Well, it'll definitely conserve Cam to use the read option less, make it more of a wrinkle than anything, and less so of a mainstay of the offense. I think that Carolina should still run things like the Veer and whatnot, and those power runs with Cam Newton where he's clearly getting the ball just because he's, Cam Newton and he's 6'6" and 200 50 pounds, you know? Like,
yeah.
But I think that if Carolina were to take a running back and keep Jonathan Stewart, we may see more, not to, like, really compare because the Titans' defense is very different than the Panthers, but, like, they did a lot of neat things with Mariota and DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry, and they didn't force Mariota to run all that much doing that. The exotic smash mouth offense, I believe, is what they called it.
Yeah, I've heard them. I've heard that that term as well, but I did not see much Tennessee this year.
My brother's a Titans fan, so it's one of those things where anytime I talk to him or see him, that's like the first topic of conversation is what's new with the Panthers, what's new with the Titans. So I have a little bit more knowledge there than I probably should, and I watched a couple of the games, and they definitely introduced a style that is very similar to what Carolina did, which is run the ball down your throat and throw the ball off of that. So
where do you think they're going with the draft pick?
Who, Carolina or the Titans?
Titans.
They have two first rounders, I know that.
Yeah, they were the beneficiary of one of the quarterback trades last year, I believe.
Right.
I got to figure out where they're picking first. I don't remember that off the top of my head. Let me see.
Like,
NFL draft order.
Fourth or fifth, and then like 18th.
Yeah. I could see them targeting a safety in this draft just because their defensive backs were not all that great last year. And I think that with the kind of defense they're trying to run with Arakpo and finally, what's his face? Their one defensive end, Derek Morgan. I think that with those two playing so well, I think that they'll target a safety in this draft because there's so many top level safeties that can be picked in this draft. And I think they may try to target a wide receiver too, just because Rishard Matthews was decent, and but they jettisoned Kendall Wright, and they got some good work out of what was that guy's name? The rookie wide receiver they had this year that was like supposed to be a big deal, and then ended up not doing a whole lot.
Tajay
Sharp, that's right. Yeah, Tajay Sharp. Yep. So that would be just based on need what I would look at. I haven't really delved too far into where they're gonna pick. But I would think those are the two biggest needs for them, and they could very easily find that in this draft.
I was thinking those two, and also maybe a cornerback.
Yeah, a corner would certainly behoove them as well.
I just pulled up the mock draft central on NFL.com, and it's got the first round mocks by Jeremiah, Bucky Brooks, Zerline, and Chad Reuter. And all four gave him a defensive back, Marshawn Lattimore by two of them, and then Peppers is one of them, and then Jamal Adams the other one. So all four gave him a defensive back at number five.
I can see it. I mean, that's one of the biggest needs they have. And in that division, they have Andrew Luck. They have not really a good quarterback situation, but DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller against the Texans, and obviously Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns with the Jaguars, and T.Y. Hilton and Dante Moncrief with the Colts. So it's like they have a lot of good receivers they have to guard in order to win that division.
It's a good point.
This draft, I really don't have a good idea. It's like all the teams can go a variety of ways, like Jacksonville right in front of them. I could see them go running back even.
Yeah, Yeldon didn't work out so well for him. He's been, I would call, average. The other thing about this draft, too, is, like, obviously the NFL is so pass-heavy nowadays, and so many teams need safety help. So I think there's going to be a real emphasis on defensive backs in this draft in the first round.
And the talent's there to match it. There's, you know, easily six or seven really good corners and you know, three or four pretty talented safeties. So, you know, they could easily be 10 or so defensive backs taken in the first round this year.
Yeah, I'm looking at a mock from Walter Football. He's got Solomon Thomas going fourth. Fournette, well, you mentioned the Titans. They're getting Jamal Adams and then Fournette to the Jets. Malik Hooker.
You know,
the
that
Chargers
pick wouldn't really surprise me.
Yeah. And us getting Marlon Humphrey, the cornerback from Alabama.
That I don't see happening.
Passing on Derek Barnett. You know, Lattimore still there. Mike Williams, Dalvin Cook. I've seen Cook mock to us a few places. And honestly, I've mentioned before on this show, I like him better as a running back for us, a better fit to our offense. But, I don't know, I'm still on the O.J. Howard thing that we discussed last week. Even now what I read about Ron Rivera in that same piece where he said that we, you know, our primary runner cannot be our running back. We're going to do a little more backfield sets in terms of two backs and 12 personnel with the extra tight end as a lead blocker. Again, I don't know how much of his hand he's really showing there, but I mean, that's not surprising. But also, you know, if there's going to be more two tight end sets, that makes, you know, more sense to pick up a guy like Howard.
And Howard
on
was
the
used quite a bit like an
H. Go ahead, Durst.
Just real quick, I was going to say Howard was used quite a bit sort of as an H-back. He was never used as a lead blocker, but you know, like a, in a fullback sense. But as a you know, off-the-line H-back that would go into motion and then you know, end up on the other side of the line, you know, he was used like that quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was just going to say, obviously, we obviously were in a very news-starved period like this is going to be for the next couple months. We're going to look at what the coaches say. But going back to the two tight end thing, like Ron Rivera's been saying that for how long now? Like 2 years, 3 years maybe? Like ever since Shockey left, really. And like, what did they do last year when they wanted to go for two tight ends? They lowballed Jared Cook. They took Butler over Hunter Henry and drafted a tight end with the very last pick of theirs and then picked up a bunch of guys who used to play basketball. So, you know, it's just one of those things where I have trouble really like I think this is going to be the first offseason where I'm really not going to read into what he says and look at it more so about the visits and the mock drafts and stuff, just because, like, I don't know. It's very clear to me that they're not, that even they have ideas of what they want to do, but they have to get it at the, like, the absolute right situation.
If they really wanted to do something, they could have done that. They could have got Charles Clay the other year when he was a free agent instead of letting him go up.
Yeah,
north.
That would have worked out beautifully too. I would have loved to have seen Charles Clay with the Carolina Panthers. He would have been great.
I put a post up on that saying that they ought to get Clay.
And did you?
Or Delanie Walker.
Oh, that hurts to see how well he's doing with Tennessee.
Yeah. Yep. It'll be interesting to see how the offense evolves. You know, obviously we got to see what happens with the defense. See how much it's going to change now that McDermott's gone. You guys think that was a good hire for the Bills?
I really think so, because I think the one thing that I read that made the most sense, and it was a Buffalo Bills writer trying to make sense of it, it's that a lot of Bills players on defense really complained about not Ron Rivera, Rex Ryan's very complex defensive scheme. And obviously Sean McDermott's scheme was not all that complex in Carolina. Like, we throw out a weird looking blitz or weird looking look here and there, but for the most part, it was just, you know, that soft zone coverage, allow your pass rush to get there. And Buffalo has those pieces. Like, they got Darius, they got Wilson. They have that guy who is like 34 who broke out this year and had and led the team in sacks. Like, they have the defense to be good. So I think if with McDermott's influence, especially after he studied under Ron Rivera and Jim Johnson and had success in Carolina using that scheme, like, he's going to go there and really fix that defense. Offensively,
guys,
I'm not so sure.
Yeah. I'm just perusing the websites. I hadn't really been over to Panthers.com today, but or PFF, who is giving James Bradberry their top rookie corner for the season. Just inched out Jalen Ramsey. Yeah. Mm. Yep, they said he is the top-rated rookie corner for the draft class, though he was the 9th cornerback selected with the next-to-last pick of the second round.
Yeah, I mean, Bradberry didn't have the splash plays that Ramsey had, but when Jacksonville was in the shootouts that they were in and the blowouts that they were in, it does give corners like him a chance to shine because they're on the field so freaking much. But, like, I mentioned this when I wrote my review of Bradberry's season. Like, it was just my off-season impressions. And basically, it was just, like, my way to take, like, any notes I had taken over the season, I kind of shared them. I didn't really have film to back it up because the All-22 has been really bad for me on my end. But and there were a lot of plays where Bradberry, they'd throw a ball deep when Bradberry was one-on-one with the guy, and the ball didn't get touched. It just hit the dirt. And that's a successful play as a corner. If your coverage is so tight the receiver can't even get his hands on it, you did your job. And PFF, like, a lot of our fans obviously sometimes criticize PFF, but I think that their scouting of defensive backs is pretty good. I think it's very on point, and I do consider plays like that where the wide receiver was thrown a catchable ball and didn't even get his hands on it. So
that says a lot about Gettleman picking players that fit the scheme too.
Yes, definitely.
And speaking of PFF, really a few hours ago, they published their top 101 players for 2016. It's actually already half. Like, the top 50 was today, and I guess the rest are going to be published tomorrow. But anyway, so Panthers didn't have anybody on the list until number 48, Luke Kuechly, and then 49, Quan Short. So we had, you know, back-to-back players, but those are only two Panthers that made it on their top 50 list.
Yeah, well, Kuechly can't do everything on defense, and the part of the year where he was healthy, the defense looked pretty atrocious most of the time. So, you know.
I'll tell you what, let's go ahead and add John to the line. What's up, John?
Good evening. I just wanted to tell you a little something. My daughter lives down towards Atlanta in Buford in the Reservoir Development. And she said it was really loud all Sunday evening. People are out in the yard, lights were on. She said it was amazing how quick all the lights shut off and everybody went home. Since then, she's a big Panthers fan, too. She just loved it. But that was rather interesting. She did. She said they left and the lights went off in a hurry. And let me just say one other thing about Matt Ryan. What did he do after the first half, really, other than a few passes here or there? Every time they needed him to do something, like on that third down right there at the end, the ball missed the receiver on the out. Didn't make a play when they needed it. Why give him a pass? What's he ever proven?
That's true.
Bad mouth. He deserved it. Why not Ryan? I don't care what he did, what, 17 or whatever, of 23 or whatever it was. When they need him, what they do in the second half.
He only threw for 280. He only threw for 280, which is not a bad day, but you know, Brady put up 400 and something.
Brady also threw 63 passes.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, the thing about it was, look at the yard. How much did they gain? What, 200-300 yards? Time of possession?
Yeah.
I mean, Atlanta basically won the first half of the game. They didn't do much after when they really needed to, Dave. And by the way, they're the one team that probably make me pull for the Patriots. That's about the only one.
I think one of the worst things you can do as a team is to get a big lead and let that relax you, because it's so hard to turn that back around.
It is.
You know, once you lose that momentum, the other team gets it, it's really hard to stop. And, you know, again, you can't turn down the points, but, you know, after the pick six, it was, what, 21-3, and then it got 28-3. I mean, all those fans and everyone just started thinking about, well, who's MVP? And, you know, this game is over. I even said those words. I said, oh, this game's over.
And you're right, Jack, with the point about momentum. And I think it's just human nature at that point when you're up by that much and you're like, you know what, this lead is damn near insurmountable, to stop taking chances and to play it safe, because you don't want to be the guy that gave up the stupid play that allowed them to get back in the game. But that's exactly the problem that happened with Carolina last year too, with all those games where a team almost brought it back and Carolina had to make a game-saving play just to seal a win where they were up at one point by like four scores, you know, like it's tough, especially for defensive backs. The best defensive backs in the NFL take chances, and when you stop taking chances, you take away your competitive edge as a defensive back.
That's a good point. Like, also for us, the worst thing that could happen on offense is that we just march right, you know, take the opening kickoff and march right down the field, and it's suddenly like, oh, well, this is easy.
Yep.
And then you don't score again for the rest of the damn game.
The other team's not going to adjust to stop that.
Hmm?
How many times have the Panthers did that and then stuck the rest of the day?
Yeah, I remember that.
One more comment. You think it's a possibility that the Panthers would trade down? Some of the players I see, I sit there, even Fournette, he's a great player, but I just wonder if Gettleman considers him to be the value at number 8 if he happens to be there.
You mean trade back?
Trade down, yes. Trade back.
Yeah, I'd love to see us go back to 12 and pick up like a second rounder or third rounder or something.
We talked about that last week. It'd be nice if Adams is on the board, I'd say take him. Or if Garrett was on the board, I'd say take him. But if the rest of them are on the board, I wouldn't be adverse to trading back.
And the only caveat I have there, and I believe I brought this up last week, but typically it's really hard for, like, the Panthers can't – it's not going to be easy for the Panthers to call another team like, yo, you want our pick? What, like, we want this stuff from you. You know, like, that team, there needs to be a guy there that another team wants. And really the only position that a lot of teams, it seems like, are willing to trade up for anymore are quarterbacks. And it's very possible that two quarterbacks go off the board in the first 7 picks. So I don't know if Carolina is in that position to really move backward without giving up a player they could potentially, like, really need. You know, like, there's only one position that Carolina would not benefit from having an improvement at, and that would be quarterback. I mean, you could argue like linebacker, but what team is going to move up and move up 4 or 5 picks to take a linebacker? You know, like, it's just not a very talent-starved position in the NFL. So everybody wants to trade back, and obviously you trade back 4 picks, Carolina still gets a position they're going to get somebody there who's a good, who's at a position of need. But it's like, I would think that Carolina would only benefit from, would only get a trade like that before the draft, if something like what the Dolphins and the Eagles did last year, where like they swap players and swap first round picks, and then that team has more ammunition in case they want to trade up. So, you know,
Only two scenarios I really see is if Washington wants to, Cleveland wants to get up in front of the Buffalo Bills, and then the other one is the Titans may want to get back to number 8 to get a wide receiver.
I would say, actually, that's a very good point about the Browns. I think that they could potentially make a move because of all the ammunition they've collected over the last few years. So that is a good point. I didn't think of that. But as far as the Titans go, I don't know if they'd trade back up because they have 2 first-round picks.
Yeah,
they have their quarterback.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see a reason for them to then, like, jettison a lot of the capital they got from trading down and molesting the team that took a quarterback there. So, you know, but obviously, like I said, I'm not saying that a trade back isn't possible. It's just the situation needs to go right.
And actually,
yeah,
I agree with Brian.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I could see us trading up with the second pick. If they got an offensive tackle that they like running in the 20s, package their second round pick and their third round pick and move up and back into the first round if they really want to get an offensive tackle, if they don't do anything in free agency.
Yep.
That's about where the offensive tackle value is.
I'd actually probably say that's more likely than trading back right now. That said, you'd probably have to give up next year's first round pick for that kind of move.
I don't know, if we packaged our number 40 and 72?
Yeah, 40 and then, is it 72?
Yeah, that puts you up to about 25, I think.
If the guy
25.
Was still there in the late 20s, I would say it's possible. If they're in if they're at like 21 or 22, I don't think that team's going to take that trade.
Where's Seattle at, like 26, 27? You'd have to get in front of Seattle, I think, to get a tackle.
Yeah. Speaking of Seattle, the idea of them possibly getting Jabril Peppers is terrifying to me, even though I know they don't really need him. I saw somebody mention that somewhere on the internet, and I was like, wow, that's
got me thinking about the Seahawks, and I got a question for you. When the Patriots were trying to block the kick by Atlanta, and the guy leaped over the guard center shoulder, and they called it lining up over the center, really wasn't the call that he made contact with that lineman? Because if you look, his foot touched that lineman, and that makes it illegal, correct?
Yeah, that's the reason why it was illegal, is because he touched him, where Cam Chancellor cleared our guys.
Yeah. That was the call, that his foot clipped his shoulder on the way down. I just wish somebody would have reached up and grabbed him and made him face plant. He's tried that shit before. He's done that probably several times this season. Hell of an athletic move,
I will say. I think that once Chancellor tried it on a national stage, a lot of teams decided that it would be not a bad thing to implement. So it's probably something that a lot of teams have prepared for. And if I was a special teams coordinator, I'd be like, as soon as the ball snapped, just stand up straight.
Mm-hmm. backwards, then you might get kicked in the back of the head with the ball.
Yep. That is true.
So I'm looking at the second round pick for the Panthers, Alvin Kamara, running back, Tennessee. What the hell?
Yeah, I got nothing on that one.
Yeah.
Whose mock was that?
This is Walter Football.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Charlie,
yeah,
thank you, Campbell.
He's a young back. He's a good back, I think. Young.
Yep, so that's after getting Marlon Humphrey at cornerback, then a running back. God, I hate this mock already. Yep.
What would you do if the Panthers took the kid from Stanford?
Solomon,
Christian McCaffrey?
McCaffrey.
Oh, okay.
Use him as a slot and punt kick returner.
And they got that. We just hired that Stanford coach to do the defensive backs or wide receivers. What was it?
Wide receivers, I think.
He was Taylor. Running backs for Stanford. He's coaching wide receivers.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking,
go ahead.
Wide receiver and a kick returner. If he went back that far to 40.
McCaffrey? Okay, I didn't know he can return kicks too, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, like in 2015, he had something like 1,200 yards and you know, punt and kick returns.
Thank you. I mean, I think that if you could nab McCaffrey in the second round, that would be a win just because Carolina could do a lot of good things with a running back that has speed. Like they somehow made Fozzie Whitaker a somewhat viable rotational guy last year. He wasn't like somebody you could trust to run the ball the whole game, but like you take a guy like McCaffrey and like rotate him with Jonathan Stewart in those very complimentary styles, and I could see a lot of success running the ball because he beat up a defense all game with Stewart, and then all of a sudden McCaffrey's in there on like a screen pass or a swing pass or a toss or even a run, even like an outside run. And like that defense is going to have to then chase this fresh back down who's got speed and open field playmaking ability. So I would not be opposed to getting McCaffrey, but this whole rumor that they might be interested in it with the eighth pick that was going around today is absolute BS in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, I was just thinking it'd be nice to line him up in the backfield and then do a shift and put him in the slot. Third down wheel routes coming out of the backfield. He'd be awesome.
Yeah, he did a lot of that. He can basically seamlessly go between running back and wide receiver, you know, at least slot receiver pretty easily.
And how many times last year did we see Cam take a shot downfield, like 20 yards down the field to a running back, like Fozzie Whitaker? Like, McCaffrey could probably actually make that catch, where Whitaker is still more of a pure running back with speed. Like, they tried that in their offense this year. So having a running back with actual receiving skill like that would be really good because it would allow them to – they could throw the ball downfield to the guy out of the backfield, and when they tried it, oftentimes the guy was wide open. It's just for whatever reason he may not have made the catch, or he dropped it, or it was a little overthrown. So, you know, it's something that Carolina certainly has tried already.
Yep, like I said, I wouldn't trade up for him, but if he was there at 40, I'd take him. I believe.
Yeah, I would. I'm okay with that as long as they got a pass rusher or safety or, you know, something, not another running back in the first round. Oh, let's see.
I'm hoping they don't pick a running back in the first round, personally.
Yeah. All right, I got Vancouver Chris on the line if he wants to join in.
Hey, guys.
How's it going? too much. Appreciate you holding out there. Didn't know. I know sometimes you just listen, sometimes you contribute. What do you think of the Super Bowl?
Wow, that. I mean, I want the Falcons to lose, obviously, but that is like a soul crushing defeat. Like,
yeah. I mean, it sucks to lose. You know, lose no matter how you lose, but at least we certainly didn't have any hopes of. I mean, we were just trying to mount a comeback. It wasn't like at any point did we think we were winning that game because it just sucked from the get-go. I think we scored first, and then it was all downhill from there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
It would be like imagining our Kansas City game this year as our Super Bowl. Like,
Yeah.
That was the third live Panthers game I've ever been to, and it was the second home game. And fun fact, two of the three games I went to live were all like that. Like, the first one I ever went to was in New York against the New York Giants in 2008 when both of them were fighting for a first-round bye, and the Giants just, like, the Panthers went from missing a field goal that would have won the game to letting Derek Ward and Brandon Jacobs just run the ball down their throats to end the game for an overtime win by the freaking Giants. So apparently I'm not very good luck for the Panthers.
I've actually been really lucky with the games I've went to. Like, I went
to
four last year and then the Los Angeles game this year.
Nice.
Nice, yeah.
You should go to all the games.
Yeah.
Thinking we ought to go see the Atlanta game this year. Go see the Big Anus.
Oh.
Let's get a busload, Jackson. Make a weekend out of it.
You think SB Nation would expense that for us?
I think I'm going to go over to the Falcons blog right now and post a comment on whatever thread they have and say, oh, I had an emergency. I had to leave before the fourth, right at the start of the fourth quarter. So who ended up being MVP for the Falcons?
Oh, that would be mean.
Last I was here, we were talking about who was going to be MVP. Who was it? Who won MVP?
I wonder if they're going to alter design on that stadium where now it's going to be a puckered anus.
Are you referring to the stadium?
Yeah, with that top.
That looks like a puckered anus? Oh, okay.
When you fly into Turner, you look down and you see a big butthole down there.
I had not heard that. It looks like a sphincter.
Yep.
Wow.
We'll have to keep that in mind.
Going forward with the, I was just going to say, with Atlanta going forward, you know, they just hired, I guess it was today, Steve Sarkisian as their offensive coordinator replacing Shanahan. And Steve Sarkisian was the, you know, kind of famous for the USC. He was fired for essentially being an alcoholic and being drunk on the sideline during a game. Ended up on the Alabama coaching staff and took over for Lane Kiffin during the national championship game. But Sarkisian has not coached in the NFL since he was a quarterback coach with the Raiders back in 2014. And besides that one time coaching the national championship game, he hasn't called plays in several years, even in college. So it's I'm not so sure that's a really great hire, but I guess the rumor has it that him and Dan Quinn go way back, and that's how he got the job. But looks like that may – yeah, the Super Bowl loser jinx may have something to do with, you know, them getting Sarkisian as the OC.
I hadn't read a lot on the blog today because I had my cataract surgery today, but I did read a little bit this evening, and somebody had put on there that he was the perfect fit because the only game he called was the championship game with Alabama and Clemson, and they lost the lead in the fourth quarter, so he's perfect for Atlanta.
It's been a rough couple of days for Falcons fans, I'm sure, because like last year I perused the internet a little bit, and obviously the memes came about Cam Newton and not jumping on the football and Peyton Manning and the Broncos and the yada yada yada. Man, these memes are just so savage right now on the internet about the Falcons. Like, I feel bad seeing some of them because they're really good.
They're either bad or good.
Or demolished.
Perspective.
Can I make one comment about the Falcons? You know where they find sympathy? In the dictionary between shit and syphilis. Sympathy, that is. I have that. I said, don't look
like start over.
Said,
was
the
this a joke that I missed?
Sympathy, they can find it in the dictionary between shit and syphilis.
Oh, man.
All right. I don't know. We can continue the Falcon bashing. I'm okay with that. So Julio Jones got hurt toward the end of that game?
I didn't really see that.
Did y'all see that?
No.
I heard
Coleman
something
got
about
hurt,
it.
But I didn't think Julio did.
But I hadn't read a lot today.
Maybe he had an injury going in or something, but they said they're kind of waiting. And I know Tevin Coleman went out. Wasn't sure how bad that was, but.
The right tackle went out. Traitor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, do you guys want to get into some free agent talk?
Sure. Got any rumors?
Well, I'll start with the one that that I've seen come up a little bit on Twitter, and that was Julius Peppers like ending his career with Carolina for one more year if he chooses to play. You know, with Addison potentially departing, and I think another team's going to overpay for Addison, and Carolina's not even going to touch him. You know, that's going to leave a spot open for a situational pass rusher. So I would be okay with bringing Peppers back, and he wasn't terrible for the Packers last year. What do you guys think?
Yeah,
I think it makes
way sense.
It's not going to be expensive, so.
Yeah, he made his money. I think that part of it, too, would be that he's gone. He did his whole, like, going through the NFL and playing for other teams and making the money that he made, especially the Bears. They handed him a lot of money. They paid him and Allen, like, an absurd amount of money just to get, like, little to no production from them. But, I think Peppers would be a good fit if obviously by the right price, but as a rotational guy as well, because it wouldn't force him to be on the field 90 to 100 snaps a game, but he could come in on passing situations, and he's still an athletic freak even at the age of, what, 33 or something like that. So
I just envision him on the pier yelling at the people, get off of my lake.
It just, does he even, I mean, I heard the rumors, but does he really want to come back? Because I always took it that he was kind of exiting Carolina as, you know, so long, you know, I'm big fish in a small pond here. And I'd just like to hear, you know, of course he's not going to say something like that, but it would be interesting if he did sign and, you know, he came out and said, you know, I kind of regretted leaving, you know, it took me a couple seasons, but my heart's back in Carolina, something like that.
He really burned his bridges.
He did. Go ahead, JC.
I was just going to say he had a terrible season, got offered the highest contract for a defensive end in football, and turned it down. play under a tag and then walked.
Yep.
Hey, if LeBron James can go back to Cleveland, then Peppers can come back to Carolina.
That is a fantastic point. Yeah, and I believe I read it. I don't know where it came from, but Voss has generally been good on his sources. And he said that allegedly before Peppers signed with Green Bay, that he almost came back to Carolina at that time. Like, there was mutual interest there. But we know Dave Gettleman was like, well, here's two chips and a piece of ham, so hopefully you'll come play for us.
Yeah. Here's your incentive-laden contract. If you put up 16 sacks, you know, we'll pay you like the 20th best defensive end.
Yeah, I'm looking through SpotTrack's free agency tracker, and I guess they have a few – I guess they have it kind of ranked by what they made last year. Looking through, I see guys like Eric Berry, Brandon Carr, Jason Pierre-Paul, DeMarcus Ware. I don't know if Carolina would shell out the money for guys like that. But let's see here. Captain Munnerlin's going to be a free agent. So I wonder if he'd be.
I thought you were going to bring up, actually, was Munnerlin, because we were talking about him earlier on Slack.
Yeah, I had to mute that chat because it kills my phone battery at work. But, yeah, I mean, Munnerlin would make a lot of sense.
Going back to Peppers, I don't think I'd want Peppers because I'd see him easing into retirement. He'd go back to his old take three plays off and then play one down.
The trick is if you only give him one down on most drives or, like, specific pass rushing situations, maybe that wouldn't happen. But you are right. He was never the most effortful person on the field.
I think he'd be like kind of like how Dwight Freeney was this year or really the last couple of years. And
if he would work as hard as Freeney did, I'd be happy with him. But it'd be something new in Carolina.
Yeah, don't disagree.
Yeah. Now, is Munnerlin a free agent for sure?
Well, it just says he's currently listed. Yeah, but obviously if Minnesota could elect to try and bring him back, we still have a whole, month and a half until free agency would even start. He is 28, though, so...
I mean, he could be the kind of player they're looking to move on from.
Yeah, I mean, Carolina would certainly benefit from having him back because the big position that we have problems with right now is nickel. Like, Leonard Johnson had his moments, but he wasn't anything special, in my opinion.
No. I would agree with that.
Yeah. We also have... on the tackle market, obviously Matt Khalil's been heavily talked about just because, you know, Brotherhood. But there's also Sebastian Vollmer from the Pats, who's 32. Gosser Charalis, who's also 32. He played with Tampa Bay last year. And Andre Smith from Minnesota. Those are all guys that might be within Gettleman's price range, but depends on how overly inflated the tackle market is this year.
It's slim pickings out there, really.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a few guys at the top, you know, Khalil or Whitworth is probably the best one, but he's got a lot of wear on him. Khalil, you know, has got some bad tape out there, a couple bad seasons, and he's coming off an injury. You mentioned Vollmer, but beyond those three, there's just not a lot. You know, you're taking a chance on a couple of mid-range guys, hoping you can coach them up.
Yeah, Vollmer's coming off a season-ending injury also. I don't remember exactly the details on that, but...
That's not good.
Anybody remember what his injury was, or...?
No clue.
Wasn't it something to do with his hip?
Yeah, I can't remember either.
I think Carolina's going to be diving for a right tackle in free agency. I don't think we're going to be looking for a left tackle. I think that the hope, and I really emphasize the word hope, is that Oer can return and play left tackle.
Yeah, Ricky Wagner for Baltimore is the guy that is pretty highly regarded right tackle. And, you know, Baltimore kind of does the New England thing and the Carolina thing that, you know, a lot of their better prospects, they'll let, you know, move on to greener pastures. And
I did not realize that the Lions tackle Riley Reiff was going to be a free agent.
Yeah,
he might be an okay target, but I wonder about him.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you a little bit about him actually, because I just bidded on him. And any of you guys doing that community off season mock off season or?
Nah, I don't have commitment for it.
Oh yeah.
Well,
thanks for driving up Lauren Timmons on me.
Say it again.
Thanks for driving up Lawrence Timmons on me.
Well, he was actually one of my goals is to get Timmons because I ended up letting I forget who I just blacked out the 49ers middle linebacker who's been hurt the last 2 years and so let
Bowman.
Him go. Yeah, Bowman. So I anyway, yeah, I traded him away. I was really trying to get Timmons, but. Back to Reiff for a second. He's just 28 years old. He started every game he has played in the last four. He has started every game he has played. Oh, every game he's played the last four seasons he started. He's only missed two games over the last four seasons. He's got 54 starts at left tackle before moving to right tackle in 2016. So, you know, he's not a guy that we really expect to get big, big, big bucks, but you know, he kind of, you know, he wasn't really highly regarded as a left tackle, and he got beat out by the rookie from Ohio State, Taylor Decker, I think is his name. So he moved over to the right side and didn't do great, but he's, you know, he's still a young guy, pretty high experience. He's not a complete bust like Eric Fisher or Luke Jokel or one of these guys.
Yeah. The only issue I could foresee with that is one of those teams that decides they want to be the next Dallas Cowboys and starts throwing out money left and right for offensive linemen. Because I don't
Khalil
know
had a hip
how
injury.
It would.
Yeah, Khalil was a hip injury, so that's definitely something to look at.
If the Panthers could swing Reiff as their right tackle, though, or even left tackle,
yeah.
Obviously both of those positions might need to be filled. So that would be a win.
Yeah, Brian,
for
you talked a lot about. Brian, a couple weeks ago, you were talking a lot about the value of a swing tackle, and not that you'd pay that much for Reiff to be the swing, but if he's the right tackle and something happened to our left tackle, then he can move over to the left tackle because he's got. You know, 54 starts at left tackle at just, you know, 28 years old.
Yeah. No, you're right. A swing tackle is a big deal, and a lot of the better teams in the NFL have one. So he would definitely be the guy that I would consider a swing tackle and a much bigger upgrade over Remmers, obviously.
Yep. All right. We are down to about 5 minutes. Have we missed any topics on the night?
Not that I know of.
I guess that I'd like to ask Durst, just pick his brain a little bit. I've been looking the last few days, you see the fan speak mocks that people are putting on the boards. A lot of people are looking at Posick as a center. Do you like him? I think he's too tall.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see his measurements, but you just don't see too many 6'7" centers, and I think that's where most people have him, or you know, that's where he's officially listed at. But we'll see on the, you know, the NFL Combine. Yeah, if he could come in at 6'5", I think it'd be more comfortable than a 6'6", 6'7" center. Yeah, I think I'd probably try to move him to guard, knowing that he can at least move over to center in a pinch, or, you know, kind of be somebody who can play multiple, you know, interior line positions. But he's almost got a left tackle body.
I hesitate to have anybody more than maybe 6'2", 6'3", almost.
Yeah, it's pretty rare to have a center that tall. So, Ethan Posick is the center for LSU, and yeah, you know, for those of you that don't know, he's pretty much the number one or number two ranked center on most people's boards, and yeah, I think generally considered second to third round pick.
Hey, if Carolina could nab the guy in the third round, I wouldn't be mad about it. I mean, Khalil's been having his issues with durability. He's certainly getting older, too. So you bring a guy like that in as a backup, or because we also may not be able to retain Norwell and Trey Turner as well, because both of them are probably going to get top guard money when they hit free agency. So
it's a good point.
If I were going to go, I'd try to bring in a sleeper guy like Brian Allen or something from Michigan State.
I think he may have went back. I don't know if he. I'm not too sure if he's in this draft.
He might have. His brother came out last year.
Yeah, Jack or Jake, one of the two.
Yeah.
Yeah, Trey Turner. I mean, he may be like a $12 million man. The price for guards is kind of getting a little bit higher nowadays.
And I could even see a premium. I could even see it being inflated a little bit just because so many teams, like the NFL is obviously a very pass heavy, in a very pass heavy culture right now. But the teams that have been the most successful are the ones that can run the ball. And it's a copycat league, and a lot of teams have been slowly going back to a more run focal offense, like obviously Tennessee and Dallas and what's the other team I was thinking of? Obviously the Falcons are all around a very good offense, but they invested heavily in the offensive line and the running game in the last few years. So I could even see a culture change in the NFL to go back to running the ball a little bit more and therefore jacking up the price of offensive linemen, especially high level ones like Trey Turner.
Yeah. Osemele last year he went from the Ravens to the Raiders for 5 years, $58.5 million. So that's $11.7 million per year.
Yep.
So it's kind of
a
sneaky need for the
soon too.
Yeah, he'd probably be the highest paid interior guy in the NFL in another year or two.
Yep.
All right, guys. We are out of time, so I appreciate your contribution. Everybody dialing in. Brian, Durst, maybe we'll try it again next week and see how this goes. Certainly start prepping for the Underwear Olympics coming up. Again, hat tip to GC, John, Chris, I appreciate you guys calling in, man. Always good to talk Panthers. And like I said, keep an eye out on CSR. We'll probably do it again next week. Appreciate you. Y'all have a
Thanks,
good one.
Guys.
Always.